We are the Mystery History Podcast. I'm Allison.
I'm Rachel.
Welcome to episode 165 on Alan Legere, the monster of Miramichi.
You got it.
All those words are really hard to say, people. That's not how they're spelled. It should be Legere.
Miramichi is like hooked on phonics, but yes, Legere is not easy for us country bumpkins.
No, it should be Legere. 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 No.
Yes.
Oh my God. Okay, well, I'm going to pronounce it wrong a lot just so everybody knows, and Rachel's going to correct me every time. Mm-hmm. So, fun fact, that's happening. Definitely. I might just call him Alan. From now on.
You go ahead. Yeah, that's totally fine.
Yeah, that's his name. Anyway, before we get into it, let's talk about a few things on the business, shall we?
Let's.
As always, give us your episode suggestions. We are scheduling out into January, and Jamie would really appreciate the help with us putting down some topics quickly so she can get the episode art out. Shout out to Jamie.
Shout out to her.
She's awesome. And she's been doing some new graphics for our merch on TeePublic. So we got a comic book one that says it's never a mannequin because it never is a mannequin ever. Ever. We've got one that's true crime and chill with some blood spatter and a skeleton. We've got one about our episode from Port Arthur on She Said Penal, because I said penal a lot.
New stuff, man. New stuff.
New stuff. So go get it. They run sales all the time right now. By the time this episode drops, it'll probably be over, but they run 35% off sales all the time. So you can grab a t-shirt for $16 and you can bedazzle it however you want it, whatever color you like. It could be yours. If you do order from the website, all your information is protected, so we don't know who does it. So we would love, once you get your shirt, to take a picture of you with it on and tag us in it. And we will shout you out on the show and share it, because that's awesome.
It is awesome. And we like to see your guys' faces.
We do. And then just the last little bit is we have a Patreon.
We do.
Spoiler alert. It's there. It's been there. There's over 150 episodes for you to listen to. We're getting into the holiday season. Rachel and I might take a little few breaks depending on our schedules. So if you miss us, you can join our Patreon for $2 or $5 and get more episodes to get you through.
Those will keep you busy.
Plus, that's an awesome Christmas gift for us. We love our patrons. And I just got a new batch of stickers in. So if you join our Patreon, send us your address and we will mail you a sticker and a love note.
Yes, we will.
We will. Okay, well, that's all the business that there is to say. You want to tell us a little bit about where you heard about this monster of Miramichi?
Yeah, a couple weekends ago.
Yeah.
I was doing all of the laundry in our house. Or so it felt. And I'm pretty sure I watched all of the John Carpenter's Suburban Screams on Peacock in like one sitting on a Sunday. Fold and close. But one of the episodes was on Alan Legere, and I had never heard of him, and it was just, I don't know, touched me.
Touched you?
Touched me, yeah. And I'll say a little bit more, if you remind me at the end, about the episode, like who they interviewed and stuff like that, because I thought it was an interesting perspective. But the story's scary. There's old people in it that don't make it, so it's sad. You know, it's just, it's crazy. And I'm surprised that we have not heard about it.
Isn't that wild? Like, some of the things that we do, and we're like, how is this not out and about in the world for everyone to know?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, how long have we been doing this? There's, like, endless topics. There's endless incidents like this, it seems like. And when you really look at it, like, that's creepy. Like, of course we don't know about all of these because there's 5 million of them.
Which is sad. Like, that's just
it
sad.
Is.
But it keeps us in business.
Yeah. True.
All right. Well, why don't you go ahead and get us started on good old Alan?
All right. Well, Alan Joseph Legier was born on February 13th, 1948 in Chatham Head, New Brunswick, which is in Canada, if y'all didn't know that. He emerged from a tumultuous childhood and grew up in a challenging neighborhood. I mean, they were poor. He was small. He was fragile. But he very quickly learned that he needed to project strength or he was going to be bullied his entire life.
And why isn't that pronounced fragile like they do in A Christmas Story?
The frugier part?
No, fragile.
Oh, Legier. Hold on. It sounds like Legier. I'm like frugier. I don't even know what I'm talking about anymore.
Fragile, yeah. And Legieri.
He was very fragile, Mr. Legier. So he was raised by a single mother in poverty, and his upbringing was marked by these transient, mostly men, I'm assuming, people that were coming in and out of his home. His mom welcomed them in for extra money, and one of those people that she welcomed into the home actually got his mom pregnant with him. So his father wasn't around. He was just one of these guys that would stay.
Okay.
And F his mom and then leave. His mother didn't hide the fact that she was sleeping with all these men, and she didn't hide it from her children. So she's got a house full of kids, and she's, you know,
openly doing it.
Yeah. Exactly. So amidst all these financial struggles, Alan's deviant behavior started to take shape. He also shared a bedroom with his sisters, which led to some inappropriate and unsettling observations.
Yeah.
he was prone to seeing them in various states of undress,
mm-hmm.
because they were all in that same room. And that, paired with his mother's, you know, chosen line of work that she didn't hide from the kids, just led him on this path.
Oh, no. Not a good start.
No.
Despite his naturally small physique, the harsh environment of being bullied fueled Alan's determination to bulk up for self-protection. His relentless pursuit of physical fitness, coupled with an imposing stature, transformed him into an intimidating figure. In a region dominated by the Roman Catholic Church, Alan openly rejected any religious norms, wasn't about it, expressing his disdain through satanic worship, like you do whenever you're like, F that church, I'm going to go talk to Satan.
That's right.
Leaving those around him unsettled, of course.
So he's just walking around town.
Hailing Satan.
Yeah. Exactly.
I get it. I mean, you know, I think a lot of times that's just to be unsettling. You know what I mean? Like, just to get a
freak people out.
Yeah, get a reaction from people. It also made a mark on the community as people knew who he was. So everybody knew who he was.
Yeah, and he's like this big, scary guy now. Like, he was small when he was a kid, but he is not small now. I'm pretty sure he's like 6 foot something, and he's huge because he worked out so much, and he's hailing Satan all over town. So, everybody knows who this guy is.
Right. Alan's criminal journey commenced in 1979 when a violent altercation resulted in him stabbing a man in the face with a broken beer bottle. Holy cow.
Keep going.
He almost severed the guy's cheek because he twisted it in his face. Oh, no. So not only did you stab, but then you got in there and twisted it around.
Ugh.
Ooh. He then tried to fight the police when they arrived, because why not?
You already are in some trouble. So,
yeah.
And you're all hyped up.
I wonder if the beer bottle, I just imagine the beer bottle just hanging out of this guy's face, especially after you twist it in there.
Yeah, I can't really imagine what that looks like.
I think about Idle Hands and and
his head.
Seth and his head is just stuck in there. But oh man, there's so many things in the face, like teeth and like sinus cavities and like where on the face. I need to know because there's not much there, right?
Like, it was here. Yeah, I mean, it was here, and then he twisted it. So I don't think it like cut all the way through his cheek everywhere, but I think it like mangled up. I mean, that's got to leave a real nasty scar.
And probably nerve damage, I would assume. Like,
I would assume too. And that's just like begging for an infection.
Oh, yeah. This marked the beginning of a series of escalated violent incidents, culminating in a shocking event that happened on June 21st, 1986.
So here we get into it. The beer bottle thing was bad, but now he's really like starting things. So he teamed up with accomplices Todd Matchett and Scott Curtis, and Allen orchestrated a routine convenience store robbery, and it was intended to be a simple heist. Allen was definitely the ringleader of the situation. These two guys were doing what he said. Mm-hmm. The situation devolved into a brutal ambush, so it was not simple, and it led to the beating and death of the elderly store owners.
Oh.
And their names are John and Mary Glendenning. So the boys, when they got there, Alan, Todd, and Scott, they cut the power, and then they ran through the door and demanded to be taken to the safe. And John, the elderly store owner, told Alan that he didn't have a safe.
Oh, no.
And Alan lost his shit. He brutally beat John into unconsciousness. And then he turned on John's wife, Mary, and brutally beat her, too. Yeah. Mary lost consciousness. And when she woke back up, she found her husband beaten to death next to her. Like, they were laying next to each other, and she woke up to him dead. Alan was gone, though, and she was able to crawl up the stairs to the phone, and she called 911. And the dispatcher spoke with Mary on the phone until the emergency vehicles arrived. So he had left her for dead.
Yeah. Wow. And just to beat somebody to death.
And two, like, to beat somebody to death, it's not even, like, a killing of passion. You know what I mean? Like,
it's money.
It's just greed and unnecessary. They don't have a safe. Like, get over it.
Right. You picked the wrong store.
Yeah, like, back out and go somewhere else. But, like, it sent him into such a total rage. And it just, that kind of rage like that just usually feels like it's often saved for like very traumatic or very serious situations, not that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Arrested and convicted, Todd is the only one to plead guilty, but the others would be convicted. Allen began serving his murder sentence at the Atlantic Institution, which is a maximum security prison in New Brunswick. Despite projecting the image of a model prisoner engaging in the education and building relationships with the guard, his motive was not for rehabilitation, but a carefully crafted plan for a great escape, because he's a thinker.
Yeah, so homie's like pretending to be a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, look at me reading all my books. Look at me like doing all these things. And now I'm getting to be friends with all these guards.
Oh, man. Those are the most dangerous.
Because they can bake it.
Uh-huh. On May 3rd, 1989, Allen was transported from the penitentiary to the Dr. George L. Duma Regional Hospital in Montauk, New Brunswick.
We'll say. Moncton. Montauk is a place. You can't say Montauk. Moncton.
New Brunswick. For the treatment of an ear infection. An ear infection he had caused, actually, by pouring his pee-pee into his ear.
Gross.
That's so gross. That's dedication, I'll tell you that. Because that's, I'm not doing that.
That's gotta smell bad, too.
And it's right near your nose.
Like, if you're pouring pee in your ear, I feel like people would know that you were doing that. Like your ear infection would smell like, you know, my main bathroom where my son goes pee. You know, like you would think it would just be like emitting that old urine smell everywhere.
In the canal. It would just be, yeah, I don't know.
Ugh.
While at the hospital, he somehow convinced the guards who were escorting him to let him use the bathroom alone. Not good.
Should never do that.
Mm-mm.
He had concealed a sharpened piece of metal that he took from the prison TV antenna and he put it somewhere on himself and
Maybe in his
snuck it into
butt.
the bathroom. Probably.
Ugh.
I don't really know. Is there a lot of options where it could have been?
I mean, a butt
Not really.
antenna is never good.
That seems like it could puncture something.
Yeah.
Well, while
Especially
he's
if
in
it's
there,
sharpened. Ugh.
right? So while he's in there alone, he's able to pick the lock on his handcuffs. Once he got them off, he ran out of the bathroom and pointed the antenna, the sharpened antenna piece, at the officers and threatened to harm them if they came any closer to him. Now, that seems like no big deal, right? But the guards only had pepper spray. Like their guards are only armed with pepper spray. And he freaking somehow was able to flee the building and carjack a vehicle. So the guards weren't able to stop him. They were like spraying pepper spray at his back while he's like running out of the building.
Oh, no.
So he was able to get out there, carjacked a vehicle in the hospital parking lot. Alan abducted a woman named Peggy and he forced her into the car and made her drive him away from the hospital. He was able to escape the police and later, Peggy was released unharmed.
I'm shocked by that, to be
I'm
honest.
also shocked by that. I am very shocked by that. And then listen to this. Peggy went on to say that his behavior was really strange. One minute he would appear to be really menacing and scary, and then the next he seemed normal and like kind and caring. And when he dropped her off on the side of the road, he told her, "Don't worry, I won't destroy your car."
Because I'm sure she's really worried about that shit right now.
Right.
Like,
On the
do
list of
whatever,
things I
just
care about,
leave
like,
me
yeah,
alone.
just go. Just get out of here, please.
Oh,
Yeah.
God. That is weird. So he's like
Bipolar.
bipolar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I don't know.
The ensuing manhunt exposed Alan's dark intentions as he returned to Miramichi, which was the exact opposite of what everyone in Miramichi expected. Because, yeah, why would you go back there?
Right. He
They
just
naturally.
escaped.
Right. Why go back there? Go anywhere else. They naturally thought he would be trying to avoid being captured, but that wasn't his main focus. He was seeking revenge on the community that he believed had wronged him. This is not good.
No. No, it is not.
Alan would be on the run from police for 7 months, and before being captured, he would go on to murder four people, as well as commit arson and multiple sexual assaults, sending the community into a frenzy, fearful that they would be next on the list. Could you imagine? Because everybody knew him, right? And let's say that you were just like
Yeah.
talking some mad shit, and then he got out, and you're like, oh no, oh no, he's come
Girl,
before me.
that's what happened. That is
Oh
what
no.
freaking happened. So the episode on John Carpenter's the perspective is from somebody that worked at the newspaper. And it's like a small town newspaper. So he was talking mad shit about Alan in the newspaper in town, and then Alan gets back out. So it's like from his perspective, and he's got a pregnant wife. Like it was, I mean, that episode was real interesting. And that's really like, I really enjoyed hearing it from that perspective. But yeah, I mean, everybody in that town is terrified. And it's not like, I don't even know what the population is. I should have looked that up, but like, it would be like something happening here.
I would go on vacation for 7 months.
Right? Just pack your family up and like,
Especially with what
gone.
you already know that he's done. You
Right.
know, like he's not above murdering anyone. So it's time to go. It's just time to go. And there's no, you know, there's no problem with that in my eyes. It's not like you're a coward. You're just trying to preserve your life.
Right. Yeah. At some point during these 7 months, yes, I would have packed up my family and peaced out of there. I don't think, you know, general population people, you don't have anywhere to go.
Yeah.
Really. So yeah. That's probably not an option for most of the town. But his first attack would be on Annie and Nina Flom. These two were well known in the community. They were pillars of the community, provided like all this help to people. And Annie was 75 years old at the time. She owned a popular grocery store in the area and lived with her sister-in-law, Nina, who was 61 years old. So it's like these two cute old biddies living in this big house.
Mm-hmm.
Alan entered their home, which was located just above their grocery store, and he was wearing a mask and he robbed them. Then he tied each of them individually to their beds, so in separate rooms. Nina was strangled and beaten, and then she pretended to be dead.
Yeah.
Which, smart. Like, good for you. And also, how?
I don't know.
Like, that would be so hard to pretend to be dead.
Oh, yeah.
In that situation.
If, because your eyes would be closed and you would be constantly like, where is he? Like, I don't know. That would be very, very hard to do. And just be still after you've been beaten. Like, you probably want to curl up in a ball.
Right. Like, how do you stop from, I mean, you're probably crying. Shaking. You're in so much pain. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just to be able to stay still and pretend to be dead. I mean, that's amazing. And that's what she did. So Alan thought she was dead and moved to Annie's room. And unfortunately, Annie would not be as lucky as Nina. Alan brutally beat and sexually assaulted her as well. Then he set the store below the apartment on fire. And he was hoping that the whole place would just go up in a blaze and no one would know he was there.
Come on, Alan.
Yeah.
Who else would it be?
Well, I don't know if he thought, like, maybe people would think, oh, it was just a fire and they died in it.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Or what? I don't know either.
Emergency service workers arrived at the scene quite quickly to battle the fire. They found Nina badly beaten and burned, but alive. Oh, that would be awful.
Mm-hmm.
She told police that she had heard footsteps coming up the stairs to her room. And when she got up to investigate the noise, a man had rushed into her room. The man tied her up, beat her, then sexually assaulted her, leaving her for dead. Nina was able to untie herself and free herself from the bed sheets and fought her way through the smoke and flames, but she collapsed at the foot of the stairs. What a tough woman. I mean, mm-hmm. Dang. Thankfully, yeah. The police found her before it was too late. But as police made their way through the rest of the apartment, they discovered that her sister Annie had suffered a similar attack and ultimately had died after being suffocated by her own vomit from the trauma that she had endured. So she survived the beating and being strangled, and she died on her own vomit. Like, that mm-hmm. is awful.
Yeah, it really is. So when the story hit the news, people, of course, immediately started to speculate that it was Alan Legere. He was still on the run. He just escaped from prison. They didn't know he was in town, though.
Right. Because why? Would
and
he
again,
go back?
Why would you be there? But when something like that happens, they're mm-hmm. like, what's He's going here. On?
Yeah.
Yeah. The police, they weren't sure. They didn't really have any leads, because who would want to do this to these two lovely old women that the community adores? Like, why would anybody do that? They just didn't have any leads on what was going on. Then there was a local man that saw someone attempting to break into his house, and he confronted the intruder, and the intruder fled. The next morning, the man was out in his yard, and he found glasses, and he took those to the police, saying, like, somebody was breaking into my house. Here's some glasses that mm-hmm. they dropped. And those same glasses were identified as the ones that Alan had been prescribed in prison.
Ooh.
So the police knew for sure at that point that Alan Legere was in town and decided that he was probably the one, like, doing the stuff.
Yeah.
The town now was terrified. Because, I mean, you know how it goes. Like, they weren't able to keep that a secret. People talk.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no.
So now everybody's completely petrified that he's back in town. He's murdering people. He's running around trying to break into people's homes. He continued to break into people's homes while he's on the lam. And that just really kept things like ramped up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there were reports of people in town actually waking up to find him standing at the end of their bed watching them sleep, which is, I mean, nightmares. I mean, this would be, I have those kind of nightmares.
That is absolutely nightmare fuel. Like, and then what? Whenever they wake up, does he just leave?
I guess like, so.
Oh my God.
They were still alive to report it. So yeah, I'm assuming he just left.
Whoa.
But what he's not freak. Like, yeah, like why? Why? He's
I get breaking into people's homes and like stealing stuff because you're on the run and you need probably food and money and things like that. But just watching somebody sleep, that's like, that's ew. I don't like it.
No,
steal like whatever you want from me, but do not watch me sleep.
Yeah. Get in, get out, beach.
Right. Do not do that to me. On October 13th, 1989, in Newcastle, New Brunswick, another murder would happen at the hands of Alan. These are, again, elderly folk, elderly sisters, Donna and Linda, Donnie?
Yeah. Yeah.
Were attacked and murdered in their own home. Again, the home was set on fire. The sisters had been beaten, strangled, and raped, and their bodies were badly burned in the fire. They had no previous connections to Alan, and it appeared from this was just another, you know, random attack. He just found it.
I have got to say, too, so I said before that with the Suburban Screams TV show, you know, they're interviewing people that were actually there. So, like, you know what they're saying is likely true. But the imagery, like the videos that are playing, the reenactments that play, you have no idea if that shit's true or not.
Right, right.
And I will say one of the things that was in the reenactments that really like stuck with me is when Alan would kill these elderly women, he was like beating the dog shit out of them, and then he was wrapping them up in their blankets like taco style, like burritoed in. And because they're all old and like weak women and they just got the shit beat out of them, they can't like get out of the blankets. And he's setting the places on fire.
Oh no.
And like, I don't know if that's what actually happened, right? Because this, these were these reenactments, but that just like stuck with me. Like, you know, when you're like a little kid, or even not even a little kid, I feel like Brian's done this to me like somewhat recently, where he'll like wrap you up and you can't get out. And that is so scary. I mean, I could get out if the house was on fire. But
well, not, you know, he doesn't beat you half to death.
Right. Not if I'm a 70 something year old woman who just got beat almost to death. Yeah. So that just really stuck to me. Again, I don't know if that actually happened, but that was like, I don't know, imagery that stays.
And you know that it's coming too, like, and there's nothing you can do about it. I'm assuming the smoke or the fire would wake them up if they were unconscious, and they can't do anything about it. And that's just like a whole other level of depravity, like doing that, especially to older folk, you know?
Yeah.
Now it was clear that he somehow got off on the idea of overpowering the elderly, as everyone that had been attacked was elderly and weak. And he's got
literally
like an MO.
Everyone, all and, of the people.
And he's got like an MO now, right? So he beats, strangles, rapes them, and then he catches the place on fire.
Yeah.
His crime spree sparked a wave of fear in the area. Like we said, people who lived alone moved in with family and friends for safety, and gun sales increased. Good for them. Shoot them. Shoot them. And guns there aren't the same as they are in the U.S. So lots of people, they didn't own guns, but in Canada, gun owners are most likely hunters. So, and I've heard other things about Canada, like the crime rate is just so low. Nobody locks their doors. Like nobody worries about things like that. People in Canada, it's always said, are so freaking nice. So I'm sure that this is really, this is not America.
Right.
You know, where we're just used to this.
Right. And I mean, I'm assuming that's true. Like we hear those things.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't have any like marked evidence, but so like mostly anybody that owned a gun was a hunter, and people that were not hunters were in this town out getting guns
because
they wanted to protect themselves. I don't know. Like everybody was totally freaked out.
Very few people went out after dark, and Halloween and trick-or-treating was canceled for that year. That is just monstrous.
Tragic.
It is. But I get it. I don't
think my kids wouldn't be anywhere. No.
No. Even if they didn't cancel it, I'm sure nobody would have been out.
Well, and like think about it. So he's literally just running around this town. No yeah. one knows where he's at any given time. He doesn't have a home. So he's breaking into places, like you said, to steal stuff, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And then I think he was mostly like staying in the woods outside of town or in like abandoned places. Mm-hmm. And that's scary too. Just to think about in your neighborhood, there could be an abandoned house and he's just in there.
Well, and like you know? Kids go walk on, like we used to walk around in the woods all the time. Anybody could have been a victim to this guy just stumbling upon him.
Right. Definitely. A pivotal moment in the investigation came when DNA evidence linked Alan to the crimes, and that showcased a breakthrough in Canadian forensic history because they were not using DNA before that. That was not a thing. So through his DNA, police were able to definitively link Alan Legere to the murders of Annie and Anita Flom and Donna and Linda Donny. So they have like concrete evidence that it was him.
Mm-hmm.
All the while, they're getting all these breakthroughs and everything's great, but Alan is still out there terrorizing Miramichi. His final victim, this was terrible, was Father James Smith in November 1989. And this one really left the community completely shaken. So let me just say, not like he's already killed, old ladies that are pillars in the community. Now he goes after the father of the church in town. And like you said before, I mean, this place is like Roman Catholic, right?
Mm-hmm.
So on November 16th at the Nativity of the Blessed Virgin Mary Church in Chatham, the congregation waited for Father James Smith to come and give his sermon, but he never showed up. At this point, he had been like major in the community because a lot of people were coming to him as a source of light. They're scared.
Right.
You know, he's a community person. So all these people are coming to express their fear to him, and he is there to help them. And he's been integral.
Yeah.
So he doesn't show up, and the parishioners started to look for him, and they looked through the windows and found that the father was lying on the floor and he was beaten to death.
Oh.
And there was blood all over the place. Alan had tortured the priest over a long period of time. And it was speculated that Alan was trying to get him to open the safe in the church.
Uh-huh.
And that's why he had tortured him for a long time, trying to get him to open it. Alan had ended up slicing his throat and cutting up his chest. And the post-mortem later showed that Alan had leaped onto the priest and separated his ribs from his sternum.
Oh, my God.
So yeah.
Brutal.
It was bad.
Man. Well, and that, I mean, it kind of makes sense, right? Because of the town being the way it was, and he was hailing Satan all over the place. So this was like the last middle finger he could really give, you know?
Yeah.
Ugh. Okay. So after the brutal attack, he stole Father Smith's car and he took off. He later ditched the car at a motel. And then a week later, he went on to hijack a taxi at gunpoint, demanding to be taken again to Miramichi, because why not? The taxi driver lost control on the road and ended up putting the taxi in a ditch. I don't know if that was like supposed to happen, but
good.
Probably good. Alan boarded a train to Quebec, where he would pawn off the Donahue. I don't know why that's so hard.
The Donnie sisters.
Yeah, the Donnie sisters. Jewelry for cash. The police were tipped off that he was in Montreal, so the Quebec police had been told to search for a man with an eagle tattoo on his arm, as Alan had. Eventually, they actually found Alan, and they thought that it was him, so they told him to lift up his sleeve, and when he did, there was no tattoo. But guess what? They checked the wrong friggin' arm.
Yeah.
This really happened. They checked the wrong arm. Why wouldn't you just be like, show me both your arms?
If you were because if you they weren't unsure. They didn't think they had bad information here.
I would just, you know, just for my own sake, show me both of them. Let me see what you got going on. So they were told the tattoo was on his right arm, and it was actually on the left. So they checked his right arm and it wasn't there. And then they were just like, bye. Like, thanks for showing me your arm. You're good to go.
Yeah. Now, you're not our guy.
Right. Now, Alan had gotten away with so much, obviously, and was feeling really confident because he was in the eye of the law and they let him go.
Mm-hmm.
He decided to head back to Miramichi. He carjacked a transport truck and he was on the road on his way back to Miramichi when police decided that they would set up a barricade to try and catch him. Luckily, when Alan saw the police barricade on the road, he gave up pretty quickly. He didn't harm the truck driver or even attempt to take him hostage. He simply just put his hands up in the air and gave in. So why do you think he targeted the elderly in all the attacks? Because he knew that he couldn't overpower them and they wouldn't really fight back. So his cowardice was exposed when faced with a police barricade leading to his surrender. That's shocking to me. Like, this, all this brutality, and he was so afraid of any real confrontation. He didn't think he could hack it, basically.
Mm-hmm. He never, I mean, I guess the first attack before he was murdering people, like at the
with
bar.
With the beer bottle. Yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't fit the rest of this. But like everyone that he planned to attack, they were always old. They were always old, couldn't protect themselves. Gross. So Alan returned to prison, thank goodness, to serve out the remaining time from his previous conviction. And then on November 20th, 1990, he was also convicted on 4 new counts of first-degree murder. And his sentencing marked a milestone in Canadian legal history because his case relied heavily on DNA evidence. And that resulted in a really solid case against him.
Yeah.
Alan was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole for at least 25 years. And then he was sent to the maximum security prison in Sainte-Anne-de-Plaine, Quebec. And in 2015, he was transferred to a maximum security prison in Alberta. Despite a brief parole attempt, Alan's horrifying crimes ensured a life sentence without the possibility of parole. So he requested
parole.
Parole. Yes.
You idiot.
Yeah. He wanted to be put on parole, and it was brief. It was in 2020, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. I'm trying to find this right now. I should have just added this because I was like, what the heck? But he asked for it in 2020. It was, you know, he got a whatever it's called where they actually listen to you, like a hearing.
Yeah.
In 2021, and they asked him things like if he considered himself to be a violent person, and he said would say no. Uh-huh. If he considers himself a sexual offender, he would say no. It also said that they would ask him yes or no questions, and he would talk for like 15 minutes.
Oh, really? So he was really trying to like schmooze it up, pretty much.
I don't know what his thought process was there, because I think it sounds like he genuinely wanted to be granted parole, but like, I don't know, he's crazy. And it says Dew, which was one of the people at the hearing, asked if he's reminded in any way of the pain and suffering people felt as a result of his actions. And Logier said, yeah, I understand that part. But the one thing that he doesn't understand is, quote, why they can't forgive me, why they can't forget.
Ugh. Are you kidding me? Well, this might have been a ploy because he was born in 1948. So he's 75 in now. So
maybe, 2020, yeah.
maybe he was trying to do like one of those compassionate release programs where like now he's too old to like hurt anybody or whatever.
Well, but and he's asked for like day trips, things like that, and they said no. Like they said no, that he can't, because they don't have the people to like, you know, watch him.
Well, yeah,
basically.
Well, I hope that all of the people that is watching him, like the guards, know what he did the last time. You know what I mean? Like where he tried to befriend them and do all this stuff, and he's just pulling the wool over their eyes.
Right. He's trying.
This is nuts.
Isn't it? Ugh. It really is. So he's still in prison. Thank goodness.
Yeah, thank goodness.
At this point. Because I mean, he, like you said, he's old, but.
Well, he deserves to be there. You do the crime, you do the time.
Yeah, he definitely deserves to be there.
And those poor people, you know, like in the poor town, just I'm sure that put a stain on that town for a long, long time. And I bet those people still worry about that, like him escaping or whatever, you know, like I'm sure that it's very close in their mind all the time.
Yeah, like I don't know. Do like most towns have things like that happen?
I would
in
hope not.
People's lifetimes. I don't know. I'm just thinking like around our town, no matter who you talk to, at least in our age group. I mean, if you ask like a 20-year-old, they probably don't. But if you ask anybody in or around our age group or older about Eric Baker, everybody knows who that is around here.
Yeah,
everybody.
That's true.
And, you know, there, everybody knows who Alan Legere is.
Right.
I wonder if, like, most towns have something like that.
Maybe. That's a good point. Maybe he's, like, their boogeyman.
Yeah.
You know, like, don't go out at night. Alan Legere could be in the
woods. He's going to get you. Yeah, stay out of the woods. Yeah. I don't know. So, there's that tale.
What a story. And we don't do a whole lot of Canadian ones. Because, like we said before, I don't think there's just, like, not a whole lot of this in Canada.
There's not as much, it seems like.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like I find out things about, like, I find Canadian incidents like this, like, every so often. So I feel like maybe we're potentially just more familiar with the things in the United States, but.
Well, I know sometimes, I think they have a, and this might be totally off base. So if you live in Canada, tell us how it is there.
Call us out.
But I feel like they have, I know a couple of the cases that we had done from Canada. There's a stricter ban on like newspaper, like, you know, media stuff. A lot of times their cases are kind of closed. They do media bans where they can't talk about it. And then a lot of the times USA will be like, we'll get in on this. And then they have to get newspapers from the USA to find out what's going on.
We talked about that with like the Barbie and Ken killer.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that.
They totally like struck her name from the record for forever. Like she wasn't allowed to be talked about in the media. I'm like, why though? Like people need to know if this person is next door to them.
Absolutely, people should know.
So maybe they just keep a tighter wrap on things than we do, and that's why we just think that they're perfect over there.
Maybe that is why.
But I don't
understand. I mean, they just let her like walk out of there and have a life.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like kept her name secret and kept her
well, and she was like working with kids like in the PTA and stuff.
Yeah,
and she had helped murder girls it's
freaking bananas. We did an episode on that earlier, so if you haven't listened to that yet, you can go check it out. But yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, I have no idea what episode number it was. A while ago, the Ken and Barbie killers though, that was crazy. Mm-hmm. So all right, well, we hope do you have something else?
Nope. I have to cite my sources still.
Oh, yes,
I cite my sources. So I used Wikipedia.com, Medium.com, CBC.ca. And then again, I got the idea from John Carpenter's Suburban Screams on Peacock. I enjoyed it. I read a bunch of reviews about that show in general and everybody was hating on it. But I will say it's perfectly fine to like mindlessly fold laundry and have on.
Yeah, I'm just not a fan of the reenactment stuff. I would much rather have real life stuff, like camera footage, or even if there isn't anything, just leave it out then. I don't need a reenactment. I feel like a lot of times it's corny and it ruins it for me.
It does, for sure. I think this was saved by the fact that they were actually interviewing people. But even still, yeah. I'll say there was a couple episodes that I was like, well, this is crap.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, well, did enjoy it. But this one, I like saw this and I was like, is this real?
Right.
Is this for real? And I got on and started looking and I'm like, oh, my God.
Well, and like you said, though, like with wrapping them up in blankets and stuff, you don't know if that's real or if they just did that for the reenactment. Like, it's hard to figure decipher out what's fact and fiction there.
But definitely could tell, like, after. So again, they're like interviewing people that lived in the town. It was somebody telling their story. Of course, it's probably like exaggerated for, you know. Yeah. Purposes, but you know when you like see something like that and then you can get online and say like, this is still very much worth talking about in a non-exaggeratory sense, like,
oh yeah,
crazy. Sure.
Okay, well, we hope you enjoyed episode 165 on Alan Legere, the monster of Miramichi. We hope you have a great week and we will see you next time.
Bye
bye.